Sylvia and me.
Hi, I'm Sylvia Beckerman. Join me today as I talk to an extraordinary woman who is changing the world by making a difference in her life and the lives of those around her.
My name is Marnie Absalom, and I'm a licensed clinical psychologist, and I practice both in Fairfield County as well as virtually throughout Connecticut and New York. I both practice as a psychologist. I also write and have been a research consultant. Welcome, everyone, to Sylvia and Me.
Thank you, Marnie. I'm so glad that I have you here today on the podcast. And one of the things that you have is that you not just have a therapy practice, you have a health psychology consulting business. Can you kind of go into what that is?
Sure. Well, I started my career, and my degree has trained me both as a practitioner as well as a researcher. And I started my career doing research, and I was working at some agencies where we're working with medical populations. And so the work that I was doing was really to improve quality of life related to health related issues, as well as health behaviors, you know, the things that we do that contribute to our lifestyle, diet, exercise, all sorts of ways we reduce stress. So health psychology kind of encompasses both health promotion and prevention of illness, as well as adjusting to things when there are health related challenges. So the consulting part of it is both research people will reach out to me whenever they're needing a survey designed or something written or some insights into some sort of health behavior or patient population.
Well, I know that you work with clients, as you said, adjusting to medical diagnoses and health-related challenges, but also managing anxiety and depression. Can you go into what is the difference between anxiety and depression?
Sure. Well, depression is an affective disorder, so it's something that is affecting your mood. Anxiety certainly is something that can affect your mood as well, but it is more a state of feeling. There's different physiological responses in the body, and it might be fears about something in the future, whether it is specific to a particular situation, maybe like a needle phobia, or something more kind of generalized, kind of across all situations and fairly regular. So a person can certainly have both depression as well as anxiety, and some of the symptoms do overlap, certainly. So if someone is wondering what might be going on with them, if they're experiencing some challenges right now, I definitely recommend getting an evaluation to see what is going on, because that can inform, you know, the most effective treatment plan.
How does somebody recognize it? Because we could be anxious about certain things that are just minor, and anxiety could pop up. But how do you recognize that the anxiety that a person is feeling is more than just, oh, I'm afraid of a needle, because I am, but I'm not anxious about it all the time?
Yeah, well, the general criteria is when the anxiety, or in this, you know, also the low mood, is affecting your functioning in other areas of your life. So, you know, how you're performing at work, or how you're focusing, or in your relationships. If you're holding back, if you're kind of not engaging in activities as much, or if you're just feeling generally uncomfortable. So anytime you kind of take your thermometer on how you're feeling, and if it's not feeling okay, then that is a sign that there might be something a little bit more than just a reaction to something that just happened in the moment, or something even bigger, which can certainly bring about those reactions as well.
Well, you just mentioned relationships. What kind of relationships are you talking about? Is it just spousal, or boyfriend, girlfriend, girlfriend, girlfriend? I mean, what kind of relationships are you talking about?
So our mental health really can affect all of our relationships. We are social beings, so we engage with people in so many ways, you know, regularly. And it's an important part of our mental health to do so. Sometimes when we are feeling depressed, we do withdraw from these from our relationships. But the types of relationships span from workplace relationships and colleagues and to acquaintances and people who might be part of your daily life that you engage with in committees and things like that, as well, of course, the very significant relationships in our lives, our family, children, parents, and our romantic partners, spouses, etc.
Well, relationships in our work environment can really end up affecting a lot of the other things that we do. And a lot of people don't realize that. We bring in certain feelings that we have to then our personal lives. How does one really cope with that?
Yeah, so that is something that often will happen, is that people will bring whatever is going on in some other area of their life to, you know, and bring it home. Or if they've just had a pretty big issue with their, or, you know, fight with their spouse, bringing that into something that might come right afterwards. So it is important really to recognize, to just kind of stop and ask yourself, if you realize you're snapping at someone that really didn't do anything, ask yourself what might be contributing to this. Was there something going on before then? Are things unstable at work? Or was there just something that kind of had some sort of interpersonal conflict that you're bringing forward into some other part of your day? It's really kind of building awareness of what might be triggering this type of response, and then reminding yourself that it's okay to be feeling whatever it is you're feeling in response to that situation, but wherever you are right now, like if you're bringing a work issue home, you're at home and try to put that aside, recognize how it's affecting you, and that might be a good indication of your work mental health, but recognize that you are at home and trying to recalibrate.
Again, there's that difference of what is the norm for most people to go through. There's anxiety, there's work issues that go on, but I would think that it goes to what the scope is. How is it really affecting you, and how are you able to handle it, or in essence, not handle it, and really need some help?
Exactly. And this is where it's important to recognize. If you're realizing, yes, you are constantly stressed out, you are snapping at other people that have nothing to do with things, or you're engaging in some sort of behavior that you're saying, yeah, that's not so healthy. I am doing this to cope with the stress that I'm going through right now, that is a sign that you can do something. You can make a change in your life. You can reach out for support, whether it is your own support network, your friends, or if it's a work thing, other colleagues that feel safe to talk to. You can vent, which certainly has a useful purpose. However, if it's a situation that can be solvable, take action there, but also professional help as well. And that is where some structured support and guidance, and certainly a neutral individual, could be extremely useful.
Well, one of the things, unfortunately, even nowadays, there's a lot of talk about mental health, but there's such a huge stigma around it that people are afraid to admit that they might need help. We see so much talked about, this star talks about their depression, this one talks about suicide. So it is out there, so to speak, in the public. But even though there's so much talk and people are putting it on social media, have things really changed? Do you see that stigma where people are able to open up more about maybe feeling a problem that might be more than just an everyday norm? Or maybe they think the opposite, that maybe there's something really wrong with them, but they're so afraid to talk about it, and to find out that really what they're feeling is the same thing that other people. Do you see that stigma on mental health? Has it changed at all?
So I actually have noticed a change, and that is all in the positive direction. There is reduced stigma generally. Now, that is, I think, more the case for acceptance of the fact that life is stressful and that people can have situational responses to things, and that it is okay for them to seek mental health treatment for those issues. Also, things like anxiety and depression, I think generally speaking, there is a lot more acceptance and acknowledgement amongst individuals that are experiencing that and offering up support to, you know, and understanding if there's other people and if you have friends or family members that are going through things that there's a lot more acceptance around this generally. I think that might not be the case as much for more serious mental illness. I think that the stigma is still there, and there's less public understanding and openness around those issues. So there's absolutely still work to be done, but I have noticed a change, and that is certainly reassuring. And I, you know, I'll also add the caveats that certain age groups and other demographics, there's differences between them. If you're talking to millennials and younger, certainly there's seems to be a lot more acceptance around the idea that people can use support for dealing with things, and that's okay. Though not everybody, even though people might recognize it, to your point, I think not everybody is taking advantage of support services either due to feeling like they don't know how to, or there's some beliefs about, oh, am I really worth taking this time to go through this process and get help, as well as affordability too. This is still an issue very much.
Affordability is definitely an issue. And one of the problems is that years ago, due to the changing in our healthcare system, and I don't want to really go into that, but what took place was a lot of the mental health professionals stopped really taking insurance because they were so inundated with paperwork that now it's almost unaffordable for the majority of people. And not only that, but it's difficult to find someone, someone that you're actually going to be able to have a relationship with, because you need a relationship with this particular person.
Absolutely.
And one of the things is that there are some free services available, but you have to be a detective to find out what they are, because they're just not really out there, which is a shame, which is absolutely pathetic, unfortunately. One of the things that you do talk about is you mention bipolar disorder. Can you explain what bipolar disorder is and how is it diagnosed? Because I understand that there are a number of people suffering from it, but it's not something that is regularly diagnosed properly.
Sure. Bipolar disorder is an illness that can affect a person's mood, behavior, cognition, how you're thinking. And it's not always so easy to diagnose because it can manifest in a lot of other things, such as substance abuse, such as looking a lot also like a more unipolar depression, you know, more just low mood and withdrawal. But bipolar, its characteristic quality is that there are high highs and low lows. There are different subtypes of bipolar disorder. So there are some where the highs, the mania is, it is clear that a person is going through a manic episode versus a less extreme variety of it that's a little bit more hypomanic. But mania typically involve impulsivity, a lot of energy, a low need for sleep, and elation, just a very elated mood. The flip side of that is you're not always manic. You also will have lows, and the lows can be very low. And this is unpredictable to the individual. It's also very unpredictable to others in their lives as well.
How does one navigate relationships with somebody who has this disorder?
Very good question. And one of the organizations that I do consult with, bipolarlives.org, had asked me to write a book for them on this very topic. So I did. And that book is called Navigating Relationships and Bipolar Disorder, and it is a guidebook. It is for both individuals affected as well as loved ones, so both family members as well as romantic partners or friends, and it kind of walks you through what are the hallmark issues that people experience, and there's a lot of first-person accounts of what it's really like, but how do you do it is paying attention and confronting what the real challenges are and recognizing everybody's feelings involved, because there's a lot of hurt that might result from some of the unpredictable behaviors and responses, and that can build cumulatively. There can be hurt from some of the irresponsible behaviors, quite frankly, whether it's, you know, kind of extreme spending or some irresponsible sexual behaviors and romantic relationships. There can be a lot of damage that is done in bipolar disorder. This certainly does not have to be the case, but it, you know, it sometimes is. So it's really paying attention to that and being honest and working toward growth and recovery in relationships.
So there are ways of navigating. Once it's recognized and accepted, then there's something that you could actually learn to deal with and be able to, as we said, navigate whatever relationship you have, whether it be at work or personal, romantic, family. Again, that's another disorder within mental health that is just, I believe, being recognized.
Yeah, there's a lot of adaptations that would be ideal for people to understand and recognize and really be conscious about these adaptations, such as at work, if your colleague has bipolar disorder, awareness and understanding about any limitations that may need to result, such as perhaps schedule demands or work style, which can be really challenging. Let's say you're working on a team or your shift work. Why does this person get these shifts? So there are a lot of challenges ranging from the workplace to certainly at home. A lot of individuals with bipolar disorder will say that educating others is still one of the biggest challenges that they have. But as they've become more educated and aware of what their needs are, what their issues are, that as they introduce this and are open with people in their lives, that things do go much better.
You also focus on life-changing events. Can you expand a little on that?
Sure. Well, some life-changing events, tying back to what we were talking about earlier with health psychology, some life-changing events are very much rooted in something that might happen to someone, such as a medical diagnosis, and that absolutely can alter people's lives. But other transitions in life, such as transition to parenthood or returning to work or retirement, or moving to a new location, or the loss of someone in people's lives, whether it be, you know, the end of a relationship or grieving or mourning, right? So all different ways in which transitions affect who we are and how we adjust to things.
And one of the things that we've always talked about on the podcast here are, how do you get to your next journey, your next chapter? How do you take those life-changing events? Some life-changing events are very, very good. You get married, you get a great job, you have children, and then there are others that are traumas. But even with the happy ones, sometimes they feel guilty sometimes in the fact that they're elated. Kind of like when your children leave the nest, it's a good thing because you've actually, look what you've accomplished, but people are afraid to walk around being elated. So there's so many different life-changing events, good, bad, traumatic. They all lead to something else.
Right. And that is one of the, I think, things that will come out of going through this successfully, is recognizing that a change can lead to something else that, you know, can bring a lot of good. So depending, of course, on what the, you had mentioned that a lot of positive things that happen in our lives, the emotions associated might not all be so positive. There might be some guilt there. There might be fear. And essentially what happens, with change is it is inherently stressful. And stress does not necessarily mean all bad, right? So it's kind of our body just being alert to, you know, everything going on. So moving into a new house, for example, well, certainly there's a lot of stress that goes into the act of moving. But if this was something that was desired, this is a positive change, right? It was wanted, but there might be a whole range of emotions associated with that change.
I think that kind of leads us into the next topic that I wanted to talk to you about, and that is the impact of negative self-talk.
Yes. Oh, yes. So in essence, the words we say to ourselves, the messages we say to ourselves make a huge difference in how we approach our world, how we feel about ourselves. So paying attention to the things that, you know, that chatter that is going on inside of our head pretty regularly, that is essential. And my bias in therapy, the therapist, is towards cognitive behavioral therapy, which is kind of wrapping all of this up in a nutshell right there. But so much of what we say to ourselves can either be extremely useful or, to the contrary, really kind of hold us back.
A lot of times I've heard people, and I'm sure we're all guilty of this, in negative self-talk, you can even try telling yourself that the good that you're doing really isn't good. The move you're making, yes, it's great, you've been waiting for it, but wait, maybe I shouldn't be. Maybe I don't deserve this. Maybe, maybe, maybe. And it could take something that's a really good thing and bring it down.
Right. Isn't that amazing, the power of our thinking? Conversely, we could also build ourselves up. We're going through a challenge, whatever that is, something that is not desired. And we can see this as, look at me trying, look at me trying to come through this and having success and doing my best, right? So whatever the negative situation is, if you approach it in a way where you are being compassionate with yourself and understanding of, yeah, this is not great, but I am giving it my all, or I'm trying, or I'm only human, right? And that language that you use with yourself is really critical.
The other thing that you have that you talk about is journaling. How do you see that as a tool? I know you have a book out called The Big Idea Journal.
Oh, yeah.
A tool for facilitating change and bringing your idea to life.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you see that as a tool?
Okay, so when we journal, we are essentially pausing and recording things. And in so doing, often there's a lot of growth that comes through that process of taking the pause and reflecting. And whether we're journaling about some kind of deep emotional thing that we're going through, or a conflict that we might have had with somebody in our lives, you know, or even just kind of recording something in our daily lives that we do every day, such as a lot of people keep food journals or sleep journals if they're trying to work on improving their sleep. There's awareness that comes from this process. And oftentimes people will say, huh, I'm noticing a pattern here in this. Or if they're journaling, if they, you know, kind of write down daily events, or they're writing out you know, they're working through a problem that they have in their life, they might come to something from just the simple act of writing down those thoughts that are in their head and tying, you know, making connections, tying things together that weren't necessarily apparent, or coming to a word, because you need to find words to write it down. And the words actually don't have to be grammatically correct or ready for publication. This is really a tool for yourself. But, you know, finding the words and recording them in whatever way is useful for you can be transformative in that way for that personal growth reflection, whether it's something small such as, huh, I'm noticing I eat most of my carbs at this time of day, or if it's something more identifying some big emotional block in their life.
And it could also, actually, when you talked about patterns,
mm-hmm.
It can also build somebody up who is doing all that negative talk, self-talk, and be able to reflect and see, well, look, I accomplished this today. I accomplished that. Somebody smiled at me. Someone did this. It can be a big boost for some people who can't look in that mirror and see that they've accomplished something, no matter how small it is.
Right. So if you are recording your daily events, you might say, I didn't do anything today. Oh, really? You're sitting here. You've opened up your journal and started writing, right? That's a lot more than a lot of people can say, for starters. But right, it's a way to recognize patterns that if you flip back in some of the earlier pages in that journal, you might see similar trends there, or of, you know, some sort of negative thinking going on. Or you might notice that, oh, yeah, I tend to think this ways this way on days where these other things are going on in my life. So recognizing some of the associations in those types of patterns as well.
It definitely sounds like a great tool. And it's not a question of work. It's more of reflection. And I think that once someone gets into the habit of doing it, it might be something that they actually look forward to as opposed to homework, which that's not a good thing.
That doesn't have positive connotation there. Absolutely. It can be anytime you're finding something that is useful to you, it feels really good to do it. And we actually do crave routine in our lives, however much we might feel like we want newness and novelty and things. We really do crave some sort of routine. And a lot of people that are regular journalers really do look forward to that time of day or that routine, however it is for them, where they're just with themselves and reflecting.
Well, Marnie, we're in the midst of the new year. We've started it. So what advice would you give somebody listening now in moving forward with the start or the beginnings of a new year?
Right. So I am a firm believer that a new year is a phenomenal time to reflect. So wherever you are in the process, the new year, by the way, does not need to officially start January 1. And if you're looking to make any sort of change, it can start whenever you are ready for it and have decided that, okay, today is the day that I will look at this behavior. I will make a plan to whatever, whatever your plan is. But any day is a good day to stop and check in, and whether with yourself on wherever you are with your goals, and whether it be through something like journaling, like we were just talking about, or deciding that, yeah, today is the day that I really am going to begin this project or clean up this room in my house that I've kept the door closed to for so long. To start now, the hardest part of any behavior is overcoming whatever those obstacles are that are in your way and taking action. And sometimes that obstacle is just feeling overwhelmed by the enormity of whatever the project is that you'd like to do, or feeling like it's not so realistic. So breaking it down into something that feels manageable and something that is a bit tangible. So if it's a cleaning related project, just say, okay, here's a stack of these papers. I am going to set aside this time, and this is what I'm doing right now. And so breaking down the goal and just getting started.
Marnie, I so agree with you. If somebody says, well, it's not January 1, therefore I can't do anything until next year, it's never too late. It's never too early to start something. Marnie, I want to thank you. This has been absolutely wonderful, exceedingly informative, and it's been great. Anyone who wants to find out more information on Marnie, there's two places, actually. One is smarthealthpsych.com. And then, as she was talking about journaling, the other one is writereflectgrow.com. And that's write as in journaling, W-R-I-T-E, reflectgrow.com. Again, Marnie, I want to thank you and welcome to the new year.
Thank you so much, Sylvia. This was a pleasure, and I really enjoyed our chat today. Happy New Year to you as well.
Thank you for joining me today. On our next podcast, I'll be talking with another extraordinary woman. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, iHeartRadio, and of course, our website, lifeofprey.com. Listen, subscribe for free, and take us with you wherever you are. This has been a Life of Prey production.